This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Smiles all around. Dustin was smiling, Amal smiling before the show. It's a Friday show. Free agent frenzy coming up here as the NBA opens up its free agency. 6 o'clock East, so 3 hours from now, 3 West, as we say hi. Open up the show. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. I mentioned Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, back at the South Point in Las Vegas. Boys, how we doing? Got a busy show as we're going to be joined by Chris Jimenez. He covers Major League Baseball for SiriusXM. Matt Moore. Matt Moore just tweeted out the eyeballs emoji, and nobody's more tied into the scuttlebutt with the NBA than Moore. Of course, Moore covers not just Action Network, but the Nuggets there in Denver. So we covered the championship. We've had them on a bunch. Zachary Cohen, our very own, to talk about the NFL betting guide. And Mike Somich, part of the family, as always on a Friday, to join the show in the final hour. Let's get it going with the boys. Amal Shaw, how are we feeling?
Feeling good. Ready for some NBA news. Should be pretty exciting as I expect to see some things come down the pipe here in terms of who's going where. So we'll be paying attention to that throughout the day and the weekend.
Yes, I got exciting news, big guys. We say hi to Dustin Sweetelson, the man, the myth, calls himself a legend. How about this? The Nets are trading Joe Harris and 2 second-round picks to the Pistons. I know that's exciting. You guys wanted me to start the show with Joe Harris news. However, as a Pistons fan, I will say not a terrible move. This is a guy that's an elite three-point shooter, career almost 44%, did play in 74 games last year. Remember, the injuries have always been a concern for Joe Harris. He is 31 years old. I'm trying to talk more and more words to tie myself into this being a big deal for the Pistons. Pistons, big guy.
Yeah, and you know what's great is you could go buy his jersey and wear it down the street and people think you might be him.
I don't think I'm quite as tall as Harris, but yes, that is the only news we have thus far. We talked about it all yesterday, kind of as the show was ending, and that was a facilitation. Really, when Harden opted into that player option, that was to facilitate a trade. The 76ers and Harden are working together. I don't understand a team that would want him. We can start thinking of some of the teams. The big free agents are James Harden, of course. We'll talk about Kyrie Irving, Fred VanVleet. But you just tell me, is there a team that Harden makes sense to you as far as a landing spot? The Clippers, look, they already play at a super slow pace with Kawhi and PG. The issue with the Clippers, and you know, somebody like Kawhi could cover up for the inefficiencies on defense that you're going to have with James Harden. The problem with Harden is you just talk about inefficiencies. He's going to be 34 years old and he's simply not a championship player. You know, even if you look at the series they lost against the Celtics that went 7, Amal, he goes for 45 in game 1. He goes for 42 in game 4. Then game 7, when it mattered, he took 3 shots, scored 9 points, and had 5 turnovers. That right there is a microcosm of his career. He's headed Harden to the Hall of Fame. However, in a series when it really matters, and you can go back to his days with the Clip, you can go back to his days with Houston, when it really matters in game 7, he takes 3 shots. That, in a nutshell, is James Harden.
You summarized it perfectly. I would not want this guy. I think when you look at it from a talent standpoint, Kyrie Irving is the guy that you would want to acquire. But again, you're not sure what you're going to get out of him. He's such a mercurial player. The inconsistency with him off the floor is always a concern. You know, Kyrie could give you 60 great games to start the season out of 70, and you're not sure in the final 12 in the postseason if he's actually going to be available because he's decided all of a sudden he's disengaged. And I think that's the same thing with James Harden. He's got a great ability to score the basketball. He's made a lot of money. And I know Mike D'Antoni, the former coach in Houston, he said, listen, if you told James to go left, he's going to go right. So you'd always ask him, hey, which way do you want to go? He's difficult. And I think sometimes one of the issues in the NBA, Patrick, is the players have so much leverage in terms of because of the salary, they dictate how things are. I don't know if he had played with other coaches, maybe if he had been more engaging. But at this point in time, I'm not looking to acquire a player who I believe is going to turn 34 in August. He's on the downhill side of his career. What are you getting out of him? Look, he's scoring has gone down the last couple of years, and I get he's averaging still 21, 22 points a game, but overall, he's just not the same player. And to me, his attitude really is not one of a championship caliber type of player.
No, totally agree. Look, we're not joking when he said he loves to go to the strip club. He likes to party. He's kind of a free spirit. He's a person that's always had a hard time, James Harden, keeping his weight in check. So let's just talk about the viable options when thinking of a Harden sign and trade. You have to have assets by way of picks, and then you have to have salaries that match up, right? So you're talking, look, you're going to trade for Harden. Harden's not going to go to a destination unless he knows that there's a potential extension on the line. Like, for example, if we're talking about the Clippers, the first thing Daryl Morey is going to be asking for is Terrence Mann. My assumption is that the Clippers are not interested in giving up Mann, but they do have picks to offer. And then really you're just trying to match up the salaries. So that's the Clippers. The next team, I'll come to you with this one, big guy, because the next team is the Knicks. Now, I can't imagine, I don't want to put words in your mouth as a Knicks fan. I can't imagine that you want James Harden, but what you are missing at MSG and what the Knicks have been missing for a while is a star. I would say Jalen Brunson was brought to the Knicks to handle the ball. I don't really think it makes a ton of sense to have Harden pounding the basketball into the wood and Jalen Brunson, who you just paid a bunch of money to watch him dribble the basketball.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's super intriguing, the idea of potentially getting Harden on that squad, just because they have a lot of really nice pieces and they had a lot of depth, but what they lacked was that front-end guy that could take the big shots, go get buckets, and just be that elite superstar. I think Brunson took the steps to be really close to being a superstar, if not, you know, right there on the cusp of it. See, I used the word correctly today. But here's what I'd say, is if James Harden's not going to cost a lot, I'm intrigued by the idea. I think it's worth exploring. But overall, when I look at James Harden and his style of play and the way he's been over the last few years, I think I'd rather the Knicks lose the way they've been doing it than try and do it Harden's way and ultimately lose, because he's a losing player and that's what he ultimately does.
I agree with you, Dustin. I'll tell you what, guys. To me, bringing in James Harden to this team would be a detriment long term. Jalen Brunson brings the type of attitude. We talked about heat culture. That's what these Villanova guys are. We talk about Bridges. We talk about so many other guys that played under Jay Wright. I think there would be a serious chasm halfway through the season between Jalen Brunson and James Harden on that team. Jalen Brunson plays both ends of the floor, Patrick. He's going to give you every minute he's out there. He's going to play like he's only playing for a minute in the game, but he's energized for the 30 minutes a game he plays or whatever it is. And James Harden's going to give you an effort on the offensive side. He's not going to try defensively. And Dustin's right. What are we getting if you're a Knicks backer or a fan or supporter from James Harden? Okay, yeah, you can score some points, but I'd rather see if RJ Barrett can take that next step forward. Let's see what Quentin Grimes can do for me. James Harden might get us to the second round. Are we really celebrating second round arrivals now?
I think you both framed it perfectly with the Knicks. I really do. I have nothing to add there. And if you think about James Harden, so for example, the Clippers are kind of a team that's, again, a name at the top of the list. Think about what's happening with the Clippers. Kawhi and PG are both going to be free agents after this season. They both have player options, but I think at their age, they're probably going to be shooting for that one last big contract. So they potentially could opt out. Now you're stuck, if Kawhi and PG leave, with an extended Harden at going to be 35 next year, 34 this year in August. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I kind of think, and again, maybe you could talk, and this is a hardcore all caps, maybe, Amal, maybe you could talk me into a 1 year, because Listen, he did lead the league in assist percentage. He was awesome. Like, he is a good facilitator if he accepts his role. Like, for example, we'll get to Kyrie when we come back from break and talk a little bit more about Van Vliet as well. But just sticking on Harden right now, like, if he were to go to a team, and Kyrie kind of the same, if they were to go to play with the Lakers and LeBron, that is kind of a presence that you can't really trifle with. So if you have him for a 1 year rental under the guise or the umbrella of a LeBron type situation, then maybe you could talk me into Harden, but there is absolutely no freaking way you could talk me into an extension of Harden, who's chubby at 34.
So here's a note on Harden. Keith Smith, who we had on the show the other day, tweeted this out yesterday. Important thing on James Harden: this will not be an extend and trade situation. He's not extension eligible because he's only signed a 2-year deal with the 76ers last season. Whoever acquires James Harden is getting him on a 1-year deal and an unrestricted free agent in 2024.
Keith works for SportsTrack, and this is what he does with contracts. Wouldn't you guys both agree there would be an agreement that he would extend?
There, I would think so, at least on the surface. If you're going to give up a certain number of assets, if you're going to acquire him, I think almost there has to be. But I thought you brought up a great point, which is if he's not playing with a strong personality, a dominant player like a LeBron James, it could be just a challenging situation depending on where he winds up. I just don't understand some of the moves that are made in the NBA. We talk about this in baseball and basketball all the time. You see these players get these long extensions, 35 and older, and there's very few Tom Brady's and LeBron James out there, guys that can perform at an elite level past that age. And to me, James Harden's just not that guy to be able to win with. I think you look at some of the younger pieces. I can't wait till we get into Fred VanVleet. I think he's a very solid player. No way am I trying to compare his level of play to a guy like James Harden or Kyrie Irving. But there's one difference for me in terms of why I would want a VanVleet over everybody else. And I'm going to point to a guy in Denver from Canada named Jamal Murray. Think about this, guys. The Joker's the best player in the world. But Jamal Murray is an elite player, and there's probably about 12 teams if he's on. He's the best player on that individual team. But Jamal Murray has taken the approach of like, look, I'm going to go do my thing. I'll get 30 when I need to. But at the same time, I don't have a problem that this is Joker's team. I just don't think a guy like James Harden could do that in a situation unless you're playing with an MVP player like a Joel Embiid.
No, I think it's a great comp with VanVleet, and I have the perfect landing spot. Let's do that. When we come back, I've got the perfect landing spot for VanVleet. I think this team sets up perfectly for him. And I also, all kidding aside, have a good landing spot for Kyrie. So we'll come back and discuss those two. After Harden, big guy, do we have a futures market or a landing spot as far as a market for Harden right now?
I saw one globally. I'm not sure if DK does. Let me look during the break and see if I can find something.
I know they've got Wemby odds up if you want to go hit up DraftKings right now. DraftKings menu continues to blow up. Make sure you check it out. When we return, as Amal mentioned, VanVleet, that's a big name at 29, a guy that doesn't necessarily need, as far as usage, the ball. We'll come back and discuss free agency under 3 hours away. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, so here's a scenario, and I think our former colleague Jacob Roach sent over a good hypothetical as well. Let's do this as we welcome you back. Sharp Money, I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, of course. It's NBA free agency coming up in 2 hours and 45 minutes, but we're getting news right now. Joe Harris to the Pistons. Okay, whatever. Now, we were just having the Harden conversation. We'll get to VanVleet and Kyrie. But here, and this is an interesting conversation we were having during the break. We all agree the extension given to Randall was almost like the Knicks had to do it, but at this point, they'd like a redo on that. So here's my question for the two of you. If you're the Knicks, and again, the contract stuff is interesting. Let's just say it's a one-year rental. The one-year rental becomes very desirable as opposed to extending Harden. Now, the interesting part about Harden, or the conundrum with Harden, if you do take him on as a player, you have to revamp in some way your offense because he's just a different type of dude, okay? He's an awkward fit in most offenses. But if you can get out from under, and Amal looked it up, what is the Julius Randle extension? How much is left and what's he owed? Because if you can get out of the Julius Randle contract, if you're the Knicks, by bringing in Harden and shifting Randle to Philly, would you guys do it?
I think we would. Let me give you the numbers before Dustin answers. $28 million on the cap hit this year, $30 million next year, and $32 million the year after. And hold on 1 second. The third year on that one at age 31 and 25, 26 is a player option. So unless Julius Randle performs at an elite level the next 2 years, he's going to opt in at $32 million.
Yeah, that contract is woof. Yeah. And as a Knicks fan, I think you're probably going to have to extend Harden. But let's just say you get Harden to move off of Randle. Would you do that, Dustin?
As long as I'm not trading RJ, like I'm not done declaring this is who RJ Barrett is. I think he's young and I still think he's improving. I think he's a very good defender, and not last year, but the year before he really popped offensively. So I'm not totally ready to just give up on RJ Barrett, who was a high pick for this team. And they haven't had many guys at that point in the draft fall to them where they could become an elite player. He has all the skills to do it. I'm not ready to trade him in a deal for someone like James Harden. Julius Randle makes sense to me because the guy Randle was trying to be in the postseason was everything that James Harden used to be. I don't know if Harden still has that in him, but I at least know that he had it before, and that would kind of be what they're looking for to take them over the hump into the postseason. So, like, that's kind of the missing piece for them, is a guy who can get buckets the way James Harden used to be able to, which is why maybe I'm coming around on the idea of a Harden trade as long as RJ Barrett is not involved.
Amal, I gave you follow up. I gave you that game seven where he took three shots and scored 9 points and had five turnovers against the Celtics. It also makes me think of, boys, remember in Houston when KD went down and the Rockets had every chance to beat Golden State that year? And didn't they go like 3-for-40 from three? And Harden was in the mix. You can look up the numbers, Dustin. It was an all-time bad shooting performance in a closeout game, and Harden couldn't make a bucket. That is James Harden in a nutshell.
You're absolutely right about that. By the way, I didn't think you said 3-for-40, so that'd be 7.5%. Was their percentage really that high in that game? I mean, these guys couldn't hit a shot.
It was so bad.
You're so right. And I just want to go back real quickly to your point on RJ Barrett. Look, I'm not looking to move him. This is a guy last two seasons that's averaged about between the 2 years, 19.5 points per game. I think he's a solid number three. You've got a piece in Jalen Brunson. You need a true number one on that team.
Yeah.
And I think you guys are correct. You move on from Julius Randle. Here's the problem I have with Julius. Not only the contract, 3-for-90 remaining, but guys, don't you get the sense with Julius Randle, he thinks he's a little bit better than other people him being? Yeah, I mean, that's an issue for me.
Oh, yeah, and I think he has a domineering, not in a good way, personality. Yeah. I think he's divisive. That is just from the outside looking in. I think he's a bit of a curmudgeon. Do you have that number? It might have been 3-for-37, something like that.
It was 7-for-44.
7-for-44?
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking at the wrong year. I had to find the right year for it.
And Harden was, again, that was an opportunity. They were at home, too. I believe the game was in Houston.
Were at home. And to your point on James Harden in that game, 2-for-13 from the 3-point line.
It's so bad. Yeah.
When they needed him most.
Yes.
On a good team. They were a good team.
So transitioning from him, and I was thinking about, this is really cheesy. Maybe you guys will be okay with it, but I was thinking about Kyrie, and we've had conversations, Amal. We can't even talk about the handles. We can't even talk about the skills because no intelligent front office, like this human being is a non-starter. And I'll tell you what, no intelligent front office at this point is going to have a Kyrie Irving discussion, because what good is a Ferrari if the engine is blown?
Great analogy.
But like, nobody looks better on the outside. On the inside, and I mean this to you, because sometimes I can say some things that are uncouth. I'm not making fun of his mental health, but mental health is an issue with this human being. That's just factual. You're paying hundreds of millions of dollars potentially to a human being that's in his 30s now, that is shown repeatedly, and some of it is, you know, unsavory, but shown repeatedly mentally, he can't keep it together. I'm sorry, it's a business. Non-starter, Kyrie.
I would agree with you. He's 31 years old. You mentioned the handles, and I just got to talk about this for a second. The best I thought I'd ever seen was Isaiah Thomas of the Detroit Pistons. Steph Curry's gotten into that elite level. God, if you remember him at Providence. But I have to tell you, and I'm not necessarily the biggest Kyrie fan, but there's no denying his talent. I mean, this guy, a friend of mine used to joke, and I love this line. He goes, he's the best one-on-five player I've ever seen. This guy can go through an entire defense. He can do it all. He can get to the basket on anybody. But you're right, Patrick, and I like the way you framed it. You're not knocking him for the mental situation. But if you're a team and you're going to give a player nearly $200 million for 4 years or $250, whatever it may be, for 5 years, you've got to be very cautious. Now, I'm going to throw this out there, and you guys might think I'm crazy. What about the Miami Heat potentially acquiring him, because you've got some dominant personalities in Butler, Spo, and then, of course, the godfather, Pat Riley. I don't know if he'll fit or not, but I'm going to tell you, that kid with his ability, it makes Jimmy Butler a better offensive player. He is so, so talented. If you go pure talent in the NBA, Kyrie's one of the top three picks.
Oh, all-timer.
Yeah.
No. And I'll take your handles conversation and stretch it out a little bit. I don't know if I've ever seen somebody at his size finish at the rim better than Kyrie.
No, not even close.
Never. When he gets close to the bucket, never misses a shot. He's literally one of the best that's ever played the game, like skill-wise. There isn't a conversation. Big guy, didn't you just send Amal and I a text about Kyrie?
Yeah, so according to Bill Ryder of CBS, that Kyrie's going to meet with a lot of teams. Dallas, Phoenix, Miami, Houston, the Lakers, and the Clippers. Here's my issue with Kyrie Irving. I love him like both of you as a player. The problem is for Kyrie Irving is basketball is no longer a priority, and that's fine. If you don't love your job, I will not judge you for that. But don't expect your job to treat you the same way then. You should not expect that treatment from these teams in terms of contract, expectations, looking to win, opportunities. You can't expect these teams to pay you financially the way they would pay someone that they know they're going to get someone who loves the game of basketball still, because clearly it is not the number one thing on Kyrie's books. And if I'm Kyrie, I get that. Not everyone can like their jobs. But in this instance, you can't expect the reciprocation.
Well put. Very well put. Now, he can get paid, and I think you nailed the number, Amal, 4 years, a little over $200 million. The Mavericks are the only team that are able to offer that fifth year. So the Mavs can offer 5 years, $272.9 million to a 31-year-old Kyrie. It's not year to year you wonder if he can hold it together. It's day to day.
Yes.
See, there are, look, we all know Moody Peeps. There are week to weeks. There are month to months. There are year to year. Like, he's had a good year. He's had a good month. He's had a good week. Kyrie, you hold your breath every day walking into the building. That's a tough spot to be in when you're paying $280 million.
Yeah, but the problem is the talent is so tantalizing, right? Like, if you know you see an absolute smoke show, but you know she's crazy, you still might go out on that date. Right? It's kind of Kyrie.
Opportunities don't present themselves every day.
Yeah, Kyrie is like, when I look at his talent, you brought up a point, Patrick, that I think gets overlooked through Kyrie Irving. Honestly, you could take a big guy, a wing player. I don't know if I've ever seen a player with the ability that's under 6'8 that finishes at the basket better than Kyrie Irving.
It's insane. I've never seen anything like it.
But with what Amal's saying here, I think it makes so much sense. You don't know when a player like this is hitting the market again.
Yes.
They don't become free agents because normally they are good employees and those teams lock them
Fair.
Up long term.
Fair. But Amal brought up a team and it's a very good idea I hadn't thought of, Miami. But come on, wouldn't we just rather have Dame?
Hold on. You know I love Dame, but let me ask you this. If you got to win, and let's say everything.
I'm trying to think who fits better.
Forget the fit. Let's say you've got to play a big game and everything with Kyrie mentally is okay. Who's the player
Kyrie's
you want?
Kyrie's a better player.
I just look at
Dame's
it like
Dame's a better shooter.
Yes.
Dame's Kyrie. Dame is Steph Curry from three. In deep threes especially. Nobody shoots a better deep three than Dame. But I think you're right. I think I have to say Kyrie. Is that unanimous across the board here?
I think so.
Yeah. And that's why a contender is going to make a mistake and pay him a lot
right,
of money.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Right. But that's what I don't think a smart front office does, because you have to commit for 4 years.
True.
And if you're Dallas, you have to commit for five. We'll hit the guide. Amal's got NFC talk next here, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
So I believe Bill AD in the Daily Newsletter said today is the last day of our summer kickoff special. Maybe we could corroborate, but it's $175 and it gives you everything, including the NFL betting guide, which dropped yesterday. We've been overwhelmed with positive responses. I know everybody at the network has been, and that is a credit to everybody behind the scenes that put it together. Comprehensive, going to help you win some money this football season. Win totals, futures, props, best bets through the Super Bowl. Now remember, if you sign up for that summer kickoff through the Super Bowl, you also get golf, you get basketball, you get our college guide coming out in August, you get the picks every day, vsin.com/subscribe. So we were discussing it, and we've got Amal. We're going to tie it back to the guide. Amal's got three teams in the NFC. But just quickly, just to finish up the Kyrie conversation, because Amal, you and I were discussing him. Look, he obviously, there's respect with LeBron. So that is one of those players underneath that LeBron umbrella, I think could thrive. But we were discussing, you know, Kyrie's also very smart. Yeah. It's not just the erratic behavior and it's not just the unknown that you're getting with Kyrie, but he's a super smart person and a well thought out person. So when he is in a good place, he'll be in a locker room of 15 guys. He sometimes there'll be a week where he's the most positive guy. He's the most likable guy. But the problem with that, you get so many extremes with somebody like Kyrie that the drop off from his great, well thought out, just centered temperament turns into something where all of a sudden you can't find him for a while. That's an issue. Two, you mentioned Van Vliet. So let's do this quickly, and then we'll get on to your take on the NFC. Van Vliet to Houston is starting to gain some momentum, and I freaking love it. Because I've talked incessantly about Houston's young core. And, you know, Jalen Green, they just drafted Amen Thompson. They've got Kevin Porter Jr., Jabari Smith Jr., Shingun. Like, they've got a lot of young players that you bring in a 29-year-old champion and Van Vliet that doesn't necessarily dominate the basketball as a point guard. I think he would be a great fit for those young kids in Houston.
I would agree with you. The one way I would describe Fred Van Vliet is professional, right? Four-year yeah. player at Wichita State, comes into the NBA. He last 3 years, he's averaged, 19, 20, and 19. Not just that for me, but it's just the professionalism. I think you brought it up earlier with the Kyrie Irving and James Harden scenarios. Great talent, but you don't know what you have on them on a day-to-day basis. With Fred Van Vliet, I know I'm going to get, you know, basically about 30-plus minutes a game, 36, 37 minutes a game. I'm going to get a guy who's going to give an honest effort on both ends of the floor. He's a player you want on your team. He may not be that guy that you look and go, okay, he's a number one. He's probably somewhere between a two and a three for you in terms of the pure talent to win. But you talked about it with Houston, young talent. I still think that's a city that should do a better job of acquiring free agents, Patrick. No state income tax for half the games. Plus, you get to play the Spurs and the Mavericks a few times. So all those things combined, to me, I think it would be a great fit for Houston if they bring him in. I think it would change their trajectory in the Western Conference pretty quickly.
Yeah, don't sleep. And this is going to sound like I'm being sensationalistic, but don't sleep on Houston. Players love the strip clubs. You're going to laugh. You think I'm joking. Like, these are literally 29-year-old men with free time, more free time and odd schedules. I think it was Gilbert Arenas who recently came out. Why are you surprised that Zion Williamson's having problems with OnlyFans girls and porn stars? What do you think? Dentists? Women that are dentists, you think their schedules line up with an NBA player? Meaning NBA players have all the time off in the world when most people are working. And then you go to Houston, Drake raps about it nonstop. They've got awesome strip clubs. You go to Miami, players love playing in Miami because no state income tax and Latinas. Like, you think I'm joking? I'm not. This is how decisions are made for young dudes, okay? So to Amal's point, I agree. Houston is always at the top of the list because the strip clubs are lit. But ask James Harden.
You bring up an excellent point that people get overlook. I've gotten asked many times, you know, when I used to cover the Mavericks, they're like, why do NBA players have entourages? I said, you ever hang around by yourself at 1 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon with unlimited funds? It's hard to do. It gets pretty boring. You need people. And that's why they put everybody on payroll.
Yeah. It's not like the school teachers have the same schedule as a third year player in the NBA. And she's just like, I'm around 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. Exactly. No, you know who's around? OnlyFan, Insta models.
Exactly.
Exactly. So Dustin's like, so damn, jealous. I envy those basketball players.
God, if I just would have been 7 feet tall, just need to stay. All I needed to be in the NBA was someone who can give you six fouls.
That's fair.
You just needed to be a Plumlee. All right, let's get to the NFC. And relate it back to the guide. We've got Zach Cohen coming up as well. I've got a take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Watch out. It's going to be a hot one. Hint, the Chiefs could be good. But Amal, you've got three teams coming out potentially of the NFC here.
Yeah, look, if you want to take a long shot in the NFC, you're free to do so. But I'm sure there's food banks in your area that could use the donation. There's only three teams in this conference that can come out of here, in my opinion. It's the Cowboys, Eagles, and 49ers. I'm going to tell you something, Patrick. You might be aware of this. These three teams have among the five best records in the National Football League over the last two seasons. Kansas City, number one, Buffalo, number two, Dallas, 24-10. The Eagles and the 49ers are both 23-11 over the last two seasons. They are both dominant teams. You look at San Francisco, number one in points given up last year defensively. This is an elite team, despite the fact that they've been inconsistent in terms of who's their quarterback. They still find ways to get to the NFC Championship game. You go to this Philadelphia team, they come within what, a penalty on third down of winning a Super Bowl potentially, this team is right there. And then the team you talked about, Micah Parsons, when we talked with Femi yesterday about the Dallas Cowboys, I think this team has gotten completely overlooked. And I got to tell you, I was guilty of it. Highest scoring offense in the National Football League over the last two seasons, averaging better than 29 points a game. Patrick, for me, when you look at the odds right now, Philly plus 250, Niners 4.25, Cowboys 6-1. And then that's our point of demarcation. Detroit 10-1. And then everybody else falls in line. Is there any way you can even make an argument for anybody else at this point?
No. As a matter of fact, I'll relate it back to the guide to your point. So these are the consensus NFC guide predictions from our experts, right, Dustin, that you just sent me. So Amal, this won't surprise you. The Eagles, 8 of our experts picked them to represent the NFC. 7 of our experts picked the 49ers to represent the. Now you can download the guide to see who we're talking about here. And the Cowboys were 3. The Seahawks were 2. Okay, so your top 3 represented in the guide as well. And the Seahawks, too. I don't see the Seahawks coming out of the NFC.
I don't either.
Although I do think they're going to be very, very good. I know you were going to start to mention the Lions. Look, I think what benefits the Lions this year, I do think that division's down. I totally agree with you. We talked about the record in one-score games for Minnesota last year. I do think the addition of Flores as the defensive coordinator will help them, but there's going to be some regression as far as luck for Minnesota. Dalvin Cook, as you astutely pointed out, huge miss for them. I think the Packers total, I think it's more of a rebuild than most give credit to. Yep. And I actually think that division comes down to the Lions and the Bears. I know that sounds blasphemous, but I've got the Bears right there with the Lions in division.
Yeah, let's stay on that division here for a second. I completely agree with you. I think the Bears are the wild card because Justin Fields, of all the quarterbacks in that division, has the greatest upside. Jared Goff, mm-hmm. We know who he is. Amon-Ra St. Brown's a tremendous receiver. He's going to be a very good receiver in this league for a long time. But remember, Jamison Williams is suspended 6 games for the gambling situation there. That's a big blow to lose him. This Detroit team is very solid, and I think Dan Campbell has them going in the right direction. You mentioned Minnesota. I don't know where you guys come out, you and Dustin, but to me, I think the loss of Dalvin Cook is far bigger than people realize. Yes, Justin Jefferson, for my money, is the best receiver in the league. But the one thing that gets forgotten on 3rd down and 6, when JJ's covered, the check down was always number 4, Dalvin Cook. And that guy is tough to tackle one-on-one in space and in the open field. And I think his loss is going to be big. And then I look at the rest of this. You mentioned the Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love, in essence, he's not a rookie. He's better than a rookie in that sense because of the experience of sitting behind Rodgers. But still, we don't know truly what he is. I don't see Detroit being able to overcome these other 3 teams. 49ers have a big advantage because they're in such a weak division, guys. They could wind up with the best record in the NFC, give them home field advantage. I just think that Detroit is the only team I would take a shot on if you're not looking at those top 3 teams. I personally feel Seattle and everyone else, you are literally lighting your money on fire. There's no way you could justify playing any of these other teams. Seattle was a bit of an aberration or an outlier last year. The Saints are a team that could be good defensively. Maybe they can get there, but is Derek Carr the guy that's going to get it done for you? Look, I'm going to tell you right now, I think Philadelphia and Jalen Hurts come back with a focused year. I know they lost both coordinators. Everybody's talking about that. But I think Sirianni is a guy that connects well with his players. There's immense talent on that team. To me, defensively, they've lost some pieces, fine. But I think offensively, this is going to sound crazy, they have a chance to be even better than they were last year.
The Eagles are a wagon. The Eagles are scary. I think Sirianni could end up being a special head coach as well, to your point with the coordinators. Speaking of head coaches, Dustin, I'm not trying to do shtick. When I say Dan Campbell in-game is one of the worst decision makers, he loses his mind. So if you're in a big spot looking for the Lions to represent the NFC with Dan Campbell making decisions late, that's an issue.
Yeah, it's like buying stock in a company run by a hippie who doesn't care about the bottom line. He cares about everyone having a good time and feeling good.
I guess Kyrie's kind of a hippie. It's like giving Kyrie $270 million over 5 years. It's a gamble. All right, good stuff there, Amal, on the NFC. We come back. Chris Jimenez joins us talking baseball.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, bet $5 to get $150 in bonuses instantly over at DraftKings. Download the DK app. bet $5 to get $150. You got to use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, when you do so. We got you back here, Sharp Money. I'm Al Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. This is VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Got plenty to do. We've got Matt Moore with some NBA rumors coming up at the top of the hour. Right now, we'll shift to baseball. Chris Jimenez, of course, SiriusXM Major League Baseball Network radio host, does a great job at ChrisJimenez5 on Twitter. 10 years in the bigs, and he joins us now to talk a little baseball. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you. It really is. I'm just going to put some context on this. Let's not even talk about what Shohei is doing. And I know we're all sick of it, but it's fascinating. Let's not talk about what he's doing against the league. Let's just talk about with his own team. He leads his own team in batting average, home run, RBI, OP, on base hits, OPS, slugging, wins, innings pitch, Ks, ERA against. I mean, seriously, I asked somebody yesterday, maybe it was another player, how do you frame Shohei?
That's a great question, because he's in a frame of his own. That's for darn sure. I mean, to be completely honest, what we're seeing here, I know he's been compared to Babe Ruth, and I was not alive during Babe Ruth's time, but I'm pretty sure Babe Ruth did not do anything that Shohei Ohtani is currently doing. What he has been able to do, just let's call it just from the offensive side of things, right? I mean, the fact that he's leading the league in home runs, he's leading his team in literally every offensive category there is, and then you add in the pitching side of things, which may be a little bit down this year, just total statistics-wise, but still an elite starting pitcher. And a starting pitcher, if you ask me, I think some teams should try to pry him away. I know that's going to sound crazy, but if you offer a big enough package or a big enough package, I think we could see some fireworks. And I know it sounds crazy because the Angels are still technically in everything, but I don't think Shohei's signing back there next year, and you might as well get something good for him now.
Chris, you stole my next question. I was going to ask you, should the Angels make a – well, because I think you bring up an excellent point, right? They're sitting at 44-39.
Yeah.
They're outside of the wild card, just slightly a game and a half back. But do you really believe this team can be in contention? It just doesn't feel like it at this point in time. And I think you can get a king's ransom. You're getting two players in one.
You're absolutely right. And I think, to be honest with you, they missed the boat by not doing it last year. Totally understand why they didn't. But the fact that they still have an opportunity to do it this year, although it would be a very hard sell to that fan base, because I think most of those fans probably anticipate him at least getting a contract offer. Not saying that you can't do that, but if you ask me, the best of both worlds, why not throw his name out there? See what kind of trade packages you can get for him. And if you do trade him, great. You still have the opportunity to sign him as a free agent come this next offseason. So it's almost like the best of both worlds, right? You're resetting your organization, kind of changing the trajectory, so to speak, in which your organization will be going forward, and still have an opportunity to sign him this offseason. To me, it kind of sounds like that's something that they should at least consider.
Chris Jimenez joins us, SiriusXM MLB Network radio host, played in the bigs for 10 years. I want to ask you about the Padres. They're at the Reds today. You can talk about both teams because they're fascinating. How about the
sure,
Padres, Chris?
Absolutely.
They've lost three straight series. They just got swept by the Pirates. They lost 2 of 3 at home to the Nats. Lost 3 of 4 before that to San Francisco. Like, what is happening with this Padres team?
I'll tell you what, guys. I was as duped as anybody else. I was there during spring training this year for our little spring training tour. I was completely sold on the vibe of camp, how the just everybody was gelling together. You know, obviously they have such a collection of elite talent. It's really hard to see a reason why they're playing as bad as they are. But yet, here we are. And I think a lot of it has to do with this offense. And that's not something that we would have said at the beginning of this year. You would have looked at the first 4 or 5 guys in this offense and kind of laughed if anybody said they were going to struggle at some point. But that is where we are. And I think if you look at this, getting things going right going forward, they have to have somebody else step up besides Tatis and Soto. You know, Manny Machado's had a down year from the offensive perspective. He's always had a low on-base percentage. Slugging percentage is great, but the batting average is down. You know, Xander Bogaerts is, you know, he's okay. He's nothing any, you know, he's not spectacular. Mr. Cronenworth has had a extremely poor season. So, you know, like you look at things as a whole, they've gotten a little production from the back end of their lineup. They're very top heavy. And they're another team, you know, besides the disappointing part of things, they might be sellers, which is crazy to think. And if you do think of them as sellers, look at Juan Soto's name.
I was just going to ask you, do you move on from Soto because they're so far behind? He's in a free agent year. You know Scott Boras is going to take him to get the highest offer, and I don't know if the Padres necessarily want to pay that. You could potentially get something in return. But if you're a team that's potentially looking at getting a bat, let's be realistic here. Soto's played well over the last several weeks, but he has not had a great run in San Diego.
Right. And you know what, too? He is obviously their most tradable asset with the fact that he is not under a long-term deal. He still has one more year of arbitration eligibility left, which he will get a pretty hefty salary bump, and rightfully so. You know, you've got Bogarts under contract. Tatis, Machado, and Cronenworth are all under contract. There is a way that they could trade Soto and possibly even get better this year, and then obviously next year as well. You lose the elite talent and the offensive production of a Juan Soto this year, but again, you could get a king's ransom for a guy like that, especially with another year of control left, to where you could get some major league ready pieces to help your team currently. It's hard to think, but it's crazy that they could actually be better off by trading Soto and be a better team because of it, and set themselves up in the long run a little bit better off because of all these trades they've made. They've really depleted what was a great farm system, still solid, don't get me wrong, but they have a chance to kind of replenish that a little bit.
Chris, can you think of a bigger disappointment this year? And speaking, we were talking about the Reds, but staying in division a little bit, the St. Louis Cardinals, 33-47. I mean, is there a bigger disappointment that comes to top of mind?
I mean, the Padres are up there, but I think, you know, to head up that list, you have to think of it as the Cardinals. I mean, they were, by most pundits, projected to win the division. I'm steadfast on this. I predicted the Brewers to win, so I still feel very good about my pick, even though the Cincinnati Reds, who are an extremely young, up-and-coming team, exciting to watch, have really kind of to take grasp and take hold and get an understanding of what it's like to win a little bit again, which is fun to watch, of course. But this Cardinals team, it's a lack of pitching. It's a lack of strikeouts from the starters. They've had 16 blown saves out of their bullpen this year. You can't win games with the offense as good as they have it and the defense as good as they have it. They have gold glovers all over their infield and outfield. But if you can't pitch, you're not going to win games in the major leagues. And that's what we've seen. They've relied too much on some guys that just don't quite have the stuff that they used to have.
Chris, I'll give you Tampa and Atlanta to win the World Series and then or take the field the other way. Which one are you doing?
So that's a great question, and I love that. Honestly, I think I'd have to go with Atlanta. I think they're built a little differently than Tampa Bay. Not that there's anything wrong with what Tampa Bay has done. They've obviously not really shocked the world, but got off to a tremendous start and have put themselves in a great position. They are currently dealing with a few injuries to some starting pitchers, which worries me a little bit. But if there is an organization that could literally find pitching out of the mattress, it is the Tampa Bay Rays. So I got to have to at least throw that out there. But if you look at the way this Atlanta Braves team is built, they're built for success for the long term, for the near term. And I think they're top-end talent. There's too many more proven guys, not only from the starting pitching side of things, but if you look at the way that their roster is constructed, there's really not a hole in the entire roster from an offensive side of things. So generally, good pitching beats good hitting, but in this particular case, I think this offense is just too good. And I think if they were to battle each other, it's the Atlanta Braves, but probably in like six games, something like that.
Chris, we just have a minute left. Let's go AL West quickly. Does Texas hold on in division? They're 5 up on Houston.
I think they definitely can. And if you ask me, this trade deadline's huge for them. They have to address their bullpen at some capacity. That's going to be the Achilles heel for them. That's such an integral part of a quality team in the playoffs in particular. I love their starting pitching. You know, there's still some more upside in there with a couple of guys like Andrew Heaney and stuff like that. But I think this offense is the real deal, and they're going to continue to hit. So if they can address that bullpen, I think they have a really good chance of winning that division.
Chris, that was great, man. Enjoyed the conversation. Look forward to hearing you on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio. Chris Jimenez, of course, ChrisJimenez5 on Twitter. We'll talk to you this summer. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you.
You bet. Anytime, okay. You guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Really well spoken. Good stuff from Chris. Guys, I kind of botched it a little bit, but let me just read this again. So just leading the Angels, Shohei, batting average, home runs, RBIs, on base, hits, OPS, slugging, and WAR. Pitching, wins, innings pitch, strikeouts, ERA, a game started, quality starts, and you could go on and on. Like, that's just the Angels, and they're 44-39. What does that tell you? They got to sell. Like, you have to sell the only person that matters. And that is, but all those offensive categories with Mike Trout on the team. Fascinating. Matt Moore's next, free agent.